Hey everybody, it's Mike Jeffers, and welcome to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience. I'm pleased to be joined here today by Isaiah Collier. He's going to be performing, well, he's performing all over the place as usual, but he's actually going to be performing a special hit on June 29th at Cafe Logan as part of the Jazz Institute's Birthday Bash, which is June 28th through the 30th, but he's going to actually be performing at Cafe Logan in the afternoon, 3:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. Isaiah, it's great to have you on, and you're going to be there with your full group, right? The chosen few.
Yes, correct. We've actually we've been doing something lately because, as I was telling you, we've just released our new record, The Unapologetic Negro, which is an interesting record because it's our first time the project has been shifted to trio right now.
Oh.
And so we'll be playing some of the new music from that project as well. And yeah, we've just been working on different stuff as well. We have another record we're in the works with. We're doing a blues record as well.
Oh, a blues record.
Yeah, so it's our interpretation of playing the blues in all 12 different keys, 12 different various ways. My biggest thing was, or at least my thing was, I just don't feel like I hear enough of it in today's music. Since it is one of the bases of, you know, jazz, it's very important to have it.
Oh, 100%, 100%. You know, of course, you bring this up. We talked a little bit before we even got on to the phone today about a couple things, but now I want to go down all these different roads here with you. But the first thing I want to talk about, you know, because of the Jazz Institute, and I want to get back to the blues, and I want to get back to these new recordings and everything. But why don't we talk a little bit about your relationship with the Jazz Institute initially? Because I think you were you went to the Chicago High School for the Performing Arts, incredible school, and then you were also part of the Jazz Links program, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, how did that? Is that how you really got into jazz? Is by going to the high school, or were you already influenced? Were you already playing jazz at that point, and then this just kind of enhanced your experience?
Well, I remember what really made me piqued my interest the most about it was when I was younger. I was doing gigs around the city with my father, and one of my dear mentors had came through the set, and he was like, "Let's play Impression," and I'm like, "Huh?" he's like you'll hear it. And so I'm listening to it, and it was different because most of the stuff at that time I was doing was mostly R&B. And so to hear that inflection of the swing and just how everything was moving around, it was just like, whoa, it's very different. And I mean, when I was first 30, my father always told me it has always come down between Charlie Parker and Coltrane. And I had my chance to listen to both of them. Charlie Parker scared the crap out of me because he was playing too fast. But Train, even though he was doing the same thing, was a little bit more, how can I say, it spoke more to me and it resonated with me a little bit more. And so when I had got to high school, because I auditioned to get in and stuff, I found they had a jazz combo. And then I just said, why not? You know?
Yeah.
You know, it piqued my interest enough. So my head went in there, and I had a classmate when I was in there, by the name of Ryan Panaka, and he was telling me about a jam session downtown. He's doing like the wintertime in 2012, correct? And I went down to the Jazz Institute, and I had a chance to run into some other friends down there. And that was my first time being in there. And that's when I first met Diane Chandler Marshall. And then she asked me, have I ever been down there? I was like, no, this is my first time in everything. And I remember the other funny thing about when I was down there was, there was this giant cutout of Von Freeman.
Yeah.
And the thing that was funny was I'm looking and I'm just like, so who's that? And everybody looked at me like I didn't know who Jesus Christ was. And they were like, you seriously don't know who that is? And I'm like, no. And then I got, and it was crazy because he had just transitioned as soon as I had a chance to find out who he even was. So then there, after that, I was just in there going to the Jazz Links meetings, jam sessions, different concerts, different master classes, and getting a chance to just be around. And in addition to my school's association with the formerly known as the Thelonious Monk Institute of Jazz, that also helped propel me into different other situations as well, as far as getting a chance to meet and play with great world-renowned artists, travel, from all over throughout the country. In 2016, they had me playing at the White House for International Jazz Day. So all those different things just opened up so many different avenues.
I mean, what a bunch of experiences, right? But I mean,
absolutely.
You know, and you're talking about you know, being at the Jazz Links and starting off in R&B with your father and you know, playing that stuff, and then your father always telling you Coltrane and Charlie Parker and all that. But you tell me, because I have a feeling that it probably works the same way, like the way I went down the wormhole, where I started with Miles Davis, but it was the Tutu album, mm-hmm. and then I went backwards and I said, well, wait a minute, mm-hmm. where did he come from? So is that kind of the same process where you got, all of a sudden you're like Coltrane, okay, cool, and then you just start going down the different avenues and just discovering all of this new stuff? It had to be really inspiring.
Man, it was such an interesting thing about even the introduction to this. One of the funniest things were, I remember I was listening, I was playing a video game. I will never forget this. It was the funnest story to tell. It was Grand Theft Auto 4. And on the game, they had a jazz station.
They got a jazz station on that game?
They had a jazz station on that game, literally. So you're driving around, probably hit somebody, and then all you hear in the background is, dee-doo-da-doo-da-da-do. And you're like, what in the world? And you're just like, well, it's giving you an adrenaline rush, and you're just driving, you're hitting other people. And it was bizarre. And then I realized, man, they were playing a lot of standards. They had Art Blakey and the Messengers on there. They had Charlie Parker playing Night and Day. They had Duke Ellington. They had Train. They had Sonny Rollins. That was my introduction to a lot of the first standards. And that, and just having like a random radio station on different, I used to just listen to different random mix on the radio.
Yep.
So that put me spreaded me out more. And then even getting me to the different dimensions of the music, from all the way to the avant-garde, to the traditional, to all of it. It was just such a big, in a sense, a giant musical universe, you know.
Oh, yeah.
With the different planets and all these different constellations of sounds and different approaches of it.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, so first of all you kids out there, play Grand Theft Auto 4, right? I mean, that's the name of the game to get your chops together. No, but it's interesting to me because, you know, each generation of a musician, I mean, you know, we go back in the 40s and obviously, you know, jazz back then was like pop music. That's what they were listening to.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And then, you know, you kind of keep coming forward. And then you get the 60s and the 70s. And I mean, it's always interesting to me how a musician discovers the music and gets, it's one thing to hear the music, but it's another thing to like really hear it. It's like that moment when you hear it and then you get inspired by it. And then you're mm-hmm. like, I want to play that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And by you just listening to stuff and hearing it, I mean, and you're playing the game, obviously, but you're hearing all these tunes, and mm-hmm. it probably really sparked a curiosity. And then when you went and then you started playing, you know, go to the Jazz Links, you're going to high school, you're having all these incredible experiences. It just, that's how the whole thing probably just manifested into like a passion, I would imagine.
I mean, definitely. I mean, mostly everybody in my family was a musician. I was actually the last person to pick up anything. And so another thing was just like, I guess, really, and as you said, it's, and I think it always comes to the big difference. It's the big difference between hearing and listening.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finally had a chance to listen, it finally started making sense. And shortly after I started discovering Bird and Parker, I got into Grover Washington Jr. But then the guy who really messed me up in the head was when I listened to Pharoah Sanders.
Oh, yeah, well.
It was a completely different thing. I heard the similarities between it, and when I done my homework, I used to have a lot of things, because I'm hearing him play his renditions of a lot of Train tunes, and the way he was playing it was just he was playing like he owned the song. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You would almost think this wasn't even John Coltrane's composition, and it was just trying to make you want, it just sparked the idea of like, well, how do you get to that?
Yeah.
You know, that true and pure expression of the music, nothing is held back. And I mean, even with the research of it, I mean, it's a beautiful thing that I was able to discovering this being a beautiful African American art form, but also how there's so much lack of comprehension of it as well. And I think that's another reason why, you know, so many people of the younger generation aren't able to really process it. We look at it from its specific lens. Mm-hmm. Or when we talk about jazz, we put it inside a specific time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been such a now music.
Yep.
It's morphed. And, you know, no matter what form of music is in this country now, it wouldn't have been without that, without jazz music.
Right. Well, and also wrapping it back to your upcoming album, blues music too, right? I mean, because everything came out of that. I mean, you can go back hip hop. I mean, R&B, everything comes out of all of that. I think, and I'll ask you since you're a lot younger than me, but I think maybe you can shed some light on this because I always think it's interesting. You know, I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, so I was influenced by all the different styles of music, you know, heavy metal and rock and jazz and all that stuff. And that all kind of pushed into my playing. And I would imagine you growing up in your generational era, you were influenced. You weren't just listening to jazz, obviously, all the time. You're probably listening to a lot of different music and everything like that. I mean, and that to me, in your generation, I got to imagine that everything crosses boundaries now where it's not just like, oh, that's jazz, that's rock, that's blues, because, I mean, everything mixes together. And then I think what you're trying to do and you're starting to is form your own voice, and it's the Isaiah Collier voice. And that's mixed together with all the different genres that you've been influenced by.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, am I kind of on the right path on that?
Absolutely. And I mean, I still continue to spread myself out just to listen to different music. I mean, one of my biggest things as of lately, I've been my development has been checking out a lot of the works of John Coltrane, but not only that, Rascal Mitchell, and a lot of Chinese Oriental music.
Hmm. Okay. It's interesting because, you know, you bring up like Rascal Mitchell and, you know, we're talking about Pharoah Sanders and then getting into the Chinese and the Eastern influenced music and all of that. You know, it's one of those things to me that if you're a musician and you tell me, I mean, you're a musician and you're inspired and it sounds like this is the way you are, is that you're curious about all types of music. You want to learn about it, and then that influences the way you play just in general.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so let's talk a little bit about your relationship. Now, you have a strong relationship with the AACM, and you've been influenced by a lot of different musicians that, you know, are in Chicago. So how did that relationship start with the AACM? And because, you know, you're playing, you're going to the Jazz Links, and you're in high school, and then you're having these incredible experiences all over the country. How did you all of a sudden connect with the AACM?
Well, I didn't realize it. I've always been connected to it. I've always known somebody that's been a part of it. I just didn't realize it didn't reveal their membership to me until I had a chance to meet Ernest Dawkins.
Mm-hmm.
I met Ernest about, I don't know, 4 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And I met him. He had us play with a group he called the Young Masters Project. And I played with them my first time at the Hamilton Park Jazz Festival. Hmm. I mean, not Hamilton, Inglewood Jazz Festival.
Yep.
And Ernest was very intrigued by, I guess, my approach and stuff. And he took us in. We would rehearse with him every Monday night, just learning different standards. And then he introduced us to the Great Black Music Ensemble, and which is when the whole entire concept of playing the language that we know, the concept of bebop and all that stuff, was to leave, because now we had transferred to a different level of conversation. And so the vernacular shifted. And so getting away from these concepts of the melodical ideas, you can be melodic, but not in the theoretical approach you would approach if we were in the other vernacular, which would be a bebop or a hard bop sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's its own thing. So, you know, you can't be speaking... You can't be speaking Italian if everybody's speaking German.
Right.
that's the best way. And at first it would seem like so much random abstractness of it. And then this stuff would just reveal so many other, it's so much more than what it appears to be. It goes beyond the concept of what is free jazz and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made, you know, even the pioneers before them, the Ornette Colemans and all that stuff. It's all about challenging. It's all about the conventional thinking being morphed into something else. You know, we it's about being meticulous, taking apart the layers and seeing it. Really anything else, this would being around that specific dimension of the music opened up my eyes to the science behind it.
Okay. It's a different way of looking at it completely.
It truly is. But I mean, like, now we're not just looking at it. We're trying to be in it, and we're trying to be out of it because we get to observe it. You know, music is just a giant, it's a giant canvas. And the thing is that most people forget is your perspective can change if you just move to a different side of the room.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just prefer to just stay where they're at and like seeing what they see, but they won't challenge it unless they move.
Right.
You know? And so that was definitely a great, I would say it was a very effective move for me because it revealed so much other stuff. And once again, I'm still constantly always trying to put stuff in perspective.
You know, it's incredible too, because when you were working with Ernest Dawkins, he's like the perfect guy to bring you into that world, right? Because he can play standards. He's writing for symphonies. He's writing huge orchestral things. I remember talking to him 2 years ago when he was going to Africa for like a month and a half to do research for this commission piece he was doing. I mean, he's incredibly, you know, versed in all the different styles of music. So to have somebody then bring you into that world and start to tell you, hey, you know, this is kind of conceptually what we're talking about here, but be able to play all those other things, that just adds cred, I think, doesn't it, to him talking. And now you trust him to give you that those ideas, I would imagine.
Absolutely. And I mean, once again, that he was just one of the many sources. I mean, I found out one of my dearest mentors, Ari Brown, was also part of it. That was another... You know, it's all about, and that was the beautiful thing that I really like about even learning about the AACM. It was basically a collective of respective geniuses,
mm-hmm.
all in one room, being able to conform to whatever, you know. And the beautiful thing is they were all still able to be uniquely them in their own right.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the groups from the Art Ensemble of Chicago, they all brought their own genius to the plate, and it created one giant thing altogether. It's that collaborative thing that made it really such a... the biggest quote that's always been said is the AACM is a power greater than itself, and I truly do agree. And I mean, even with that, I've just managed to work with so many other great members of it, all the way from people to Junius Hall, Vincent Davis, you know, all those guys, and they continue to challenge me in the different... understandings and concepts of this music.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, another thing we were talking about in regards to like the pop artists, I think the other thing is it's our job as artists to play the now, you know.
Yep.
There's no culture that doesn't exist without the art.
Mm-hmm.
No culture without the music. And it, the best thing that those artists were always doing where they were personifying what was going on then and there.
Mm-hmm.
And
that
should be.
I totally agree. I mean, you know, and that's why I think it's interesting to talk to somebody like you, especially of your age, because I mean, you know, you're locked into that. You're putting out stuff, but you've already got this conceptual thought process in your mind. So, you know, obviously in the next 10, 15, 20 years, it's going to continue to expand and grow. And, you know, it's only going to be more and more exciting to listen to what you put out and, you know, performance-wise and everything like that. So now I'm going to wrap it all the way back, because let's talk just briefly about the new recording that just came out. And so it's a trio recording?
Yes, yes, yes.
And so what was it sparked? It sounds like what we just talked about, you know, you're always pushing the limits and trying to, you know, expand your thought processes and stuff. So this sounds like another extension of that.
I mean, absolutely. Like I said, this is the first time we've this is actually from a live recording session we did at the Club Coda,
mm-hmm.
Cafe in Madison. It was our first time playing up there. And my thing was, when it comes to playing, and some people say you should read the crowd, da 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 da, I'm also for the concept of not compromising.
Mm-hmm.
When we tend to compromise, we tend to go back on what we originally meant to do. Or in that sense, when we go against our first mind, things won't go the way that they're supposed to. So a big philosophy I've always had is always go with your first mind, no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's surely the thing that it's that intuition that is dictating. And because of that, I wasn't expecting, you know, the recording, because they were telling us when we got there, the show was going to be recorded live. And I was like, okay, cool. So me, James Winslow, Marcus Evans, when we played, and it was just a different, everybody in that audience was with us for the ride.
Oh, that's cool.
They really, nobody left, nobody moved. They were just present.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they were getting a chance to see us truly. And I see it every time as we go into any stage, any place we go, it's a lab. Mm-hmm. It's a laboratory. Every acoustic is different, so the sound's going to travel different. It's going to be a different thing that it's going to take to resonate and, you know, even to vibrate and all this stuff, you know. And so that experiment just went relatively well for us. And I mean, even us playing new compositions and most notably when I was dealing with my soprano, I was trying to showcase more of the inflection of the latest influence that I was going through. So trying to combine the approach from listening to people like Roscoe and then the Chinese Oriental music aspect of it. I did a lot of research as well on that stuff, tracing back a lot of instruments, specifically like the oboe. And the reason why this all connects was because that was one of the instruments. If you had a chance to listen to our last record, Return to Black Emperor, our title track was mostly based off of the concept of Chinese Oriental music as well.
Hmm.
Okay. And so it was coming from, the melody was kept coming from this really annoying instrument. I found out, and I doubted it specifically, it was a Chinese instrument known as the suana, which is the Chinese trumpet. Huh. And so it just had a very different, it had a very nasally sound. And it comes in many different variations in China. And not only China is known for playing it, but even in India, they're used as well.
Hmm. Man. Well, I mean, just think about it, right? I mean, you get those sounds in your head, and that's how it starts to expand your thought process and your playing.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like, you know, I mean, it seems like a real simple concept when we're just sitting here talking about it, but it's not, because why would anybody even think about doing what you did to figure all that stuff out, right? I mean, it's like,
No, absolutely. And the other thing that was a challenge was because the suana is a double reeded instrument. So if anything else, it's actually the ancient ancestor of like the oboe.
Oh, okay.
And so most people think that it's actually a European instrument, and actually it's really more ancient than that.
That's amazing.
But it's sound, and when you hear it, you're going to go, okay, that's when you listen. If you ever were a big, because another thing about my dad was he was a big fan of like Chinese movies as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we watched a lot of great movies. We were big Bruce Lee's fans and all that stuff. But the music, any movie that you watch, the music dictates what's really going on, the intensity of it or the sadness of it. So though I was looking at what's going on screens, my ears were tuning into everything behind it.
Oh, wow. that's amazing, you know? But I mean, you're really thinking about this stuff, you know. I mean that's the thing. And then you're incorporating it and bringing it into your music. And you know, jumping back over to like the performance that you did and with the live recording. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. But you tell me, you play differently, obviously in an acoustic setting or a club or something like that. You know, because you're hearing different stuff. But that energy from the crowd, that's mm-hmm. when things. That really, I mean, because you guys could have played well, but you could have listened back to it and said, I don't know if we want to put this out. But it was that energy and everybody was all together in that that made that music probably take it to another level where you said, let's put this mm-hmm. out because this is it.
Well, see, the other thing was, you're absolutely right. I was actually the first person that went, I don't even want to release this. But you see, the reason why I had to realize as artists, we have to also remember how to be audience members.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's sometimes when I go out, I usually have my horn with me when I'm out, but there's sometimes I really just don't bring my horn. And some people look at me like I'm crazy, but most people don't understand that's how I allow myself to appreciate the music.
Mm.
Because if I'm so anxious to have an instrument with me, all I'm thinking about is the comparison.
Right.
What would it sound like if I was... Because sometimes the same thing when it comes to art, we can't compare it because it's just simply what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's truly just simply what it is. And if we continue to try to compare it to stuff, you'll never get a chance to actually enjoy it.
You know, and that's what it means. I completely agree with you. Totally agree with you. You know, I mean, because, I mean, how many times have you been somewhere, or not even you, but how many times if you're a musician, you're there and you're like, man, this guy, he's all right, but, you know, I would play it or whatever. You're analyzing it rather than just sitting there taking it in for what it is, and it's art happening in the moment. You know, and just because I want to be mindful of the time, check out this transition. And talking about being in the moment, you can listen to Isaiah Collier and the Chosen Few June 29th, 3:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. at Cafe Logan at the Logan Center as part of the Jazz Institute's birthday bash, and it's free. But I know, Isaiah, before we because you and I could talk now for like 2 hours, and I already know that. You got stuff to do, and I don't want to keep you on the phone. So we'll have to hook back up, and we'll have to have you come down. We'll do a video session at some point. But let's talk about a few other things that you might have coming up. So you've got something coming up actually this weekend at the Quarry, right? Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we'll be playing there this Friday at the Quarry Event Center. Once again, we'll be working with the Trio Project, but this Friday will be me, Greg Archie, and Ivan Taylor. And that's the other thing too, having those different, it also the variation of the stuff. And this group is going to be coming from a different vibe, playing the same music, but it's going to be a completely different approach.
Yeah.
Which is always, like I said, it's a lab. You know, and it's going to be an interesting experiment to see where we get to with this group. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. Yeah.
And then you've got a jam session starting up at the Jazz Showcase on Wednesday, starting up in July, except for one Wednesday, the 19th, I think you said, or the 17th.
Yeah, the 17th. We'll be there every Wednesday with the group. We'll be there, be serving as a house band. And so, yeah.
So is that like 8 o'clock start time, like the showcase thing, and people can just come in? You're going to do like a set up front, or you're going to play some tunes up front and then start bringing people up? Or
Exactly.
Oh, that's great. And then you've got a ton of stuff coming up. Where can people get more information on all the other stuff you have happening and also the new recordings?
Well, if they want to keep up with us, we're on Facebook. If they go to our Facebook page, Isaiah Carney Chosen Few, we keep all our dates on there, and then there's a link and stuff to the record, the new record on there as well.
All right, so it's Facebook, and it's Isaiah Collier Chosen Few.
Yep.
Okay. We'll link it up on the podcast links too. But man, I really appreciate you jumping on the phone. And like I said, we gotta reconnect, and we'll do a talking jazz show or something, and have you come down, and we'll delve into this stuff even more. But it's fascinating to me, and I'm glad we connected here for the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience podcast. Thanks so much for being on.
And thank you. Much gratitude.
Definitely. And of course, everybody, you can get more information at chicagojazz.com. You can listen to more podcasts there as well, or you can subscribe, and you'll get it delivered right to your phone or any other podcasting platform that you so desire. So thanks so much for listening, and hopefully we will see you at the birthday bash June 20th through the 30th, presented by the Jazz Institute of Chicago.